statue. Hippopotamus and kangaroo.
Light the bear Adonai, Elmo Shelemar. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen Heshiv Es Hamasi Me'al B'nei Yisrael B'kan O'es Kinasi B'socham V'lo Chilisi Es B'nei Yisrael B'kinasi L'chein Emar Hideni no sein lo es verisi shalom. Vahayisa lo uzaro acharav. Beris kunasolam. Tachas asher kine leilohav. Vayichaper al b'nei Yisrael. And Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, and when the Torah says lemor saying, it means God wasn't only talking to Moshe, but he was asking Moshe to pass it on and spread the word. Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the grandson of Aaron HaKohen, turn back my anger from B'nai Yisrael, from the people of Israel, when he zealously stood up in my honor, and I did not destroy the people in my jealousy. Therefore, say, I am hereby giving him the covenant of peace, and he and his descendants afterwards will have the Brit Kuhunat Olam, the eternal covenant of the Kuhuna, because he zealously and stood up for God, vayechaper al b'nei Yisrael, and he effected the atonement for the people.
OU Israel presents Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Pinchas, as well as for Shivasar B'Tammuz. Recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 15th day of Tammuz, 5779, corresponding this year to July 18th. Let's first say Tehillim. Actually, we won't say it first. First, I want to tell you that I'm recording this earlier than usual on a Thursday because of the funeral, the Levaya, of Rebbetzin Bela Gold, Aleha HaShalom, wife of Rabbi Shalom Gold. May he live to a ripe old age, even riper and older than he is, in health, good health, and find consolation in his memories of his wonderful wife and nachas from his family. Bela Gold was a semi-fixture at the OU Israel Center. I should start by saying Rabbi Gold is a fixture at the Israel Center. He is the dean of the Avram Silver College for Adults in Jerusalem, which is part of the educational programming of the Israel Center, of the OU Israel Center. And he gives a shiur weekly on Tuesdays in Parshat HaShavua and is very much involved in other things, or at least he was until his wife became ill and was a very, very rough period for him. Bela Gold Aleha Shalom was a semi-fixture at the center. She not only attended her husband's shiur, but other shiurim as well. A very cheery, personable person, a happy person, a person who seemed to be very, very much alive, which is why the news of this morning was such a sad shock. Although, as I said, it was in the works for a while. In fact, there was a major Tehillim community-wide session this evening scheduled, and instead there is a Levaya. So, for Rabbi Gold and the children and family, Hamakom Yenachem Etchem B'toch Sha'ar Avelei Tzion V'Yerushalayim. Psalm 130, Kuf Lamed. Shir Hama'alot V'Ma'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'Koli Tichyena Aznecha Kashivot L'Kol Tachanunai. Im Avonot Tishmoria Adonai Mia Amod. Ki Imecha Hasalicha L'Ma'an Tivarei. Tiviti Adonai Kivita Nafshi V'Lidvaro Hochalti. Nafshi L'Adonai Mishomerim L'Boker Shomerim L'Boker. Yachel Yisrael El Adonai Ki Im Adonai HaChesed V'Arbe Imo Fidut. Vehu Yifdeh Et Yisrael Mikol Avonotav. Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanatunim Batzera V'Shivya Ha'omedim Mebein Bayam Uvein Bayabasha Hamakom Yerachem Aleihem V'Yotziyem Mitzara L'Yervacha U'Me'afela L'Ora U'Mishibud L'Geula Hashta Ba'agala U'Vizman Kariv V'Nomar Amen. As I have said many, many times in saying Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael, I think very much of Jonathan Pollard, and now I'm thinking also of his wife Esther. Both of them have serious health issues, we'll say, and we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring a refuah shlema to Yonatan ben Malka and to Esther Yocheved bat Rachel Bracha. In addition, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu's health in motivating and moving the process, both from the United States side and the Israeli side, of the return of the Pollards to home, namely to Eretz Yisrael. Jonathan has repeatedly told me in our frequent phone calls that that's all they really want. They want to come home. And now with the addition of the health conditions, it's even more imperative that they not have to worry about coming back to Israel or coming home to Israel. May Hashem move the right people to push this forward. Many, many Americans as well as Israeli politicians have said and paid lip service to Jonathan's return home, but it still needs someone to put actions where his mouth is. And that goes for both sides of the Atlantic, as they say, because Israel, the Israeli government, seems to be dragging its feet, and the American government is dragging its feet also. Okay, let's get now to Parshat Pinchas, specifically to the portion that I read in the beginning of the show, the first few psukim. And to do that, we need the background of last week's cliffhanger. Parshat Balak ends in a cliffhanger in the classic style of the old radio shows and TV shows. And it is one of two sedras that sort of has that kind of flavor and feel. The other one is Miketz, with the story of Yosef and Yehuda and Binyamin and the tribes. But let's focus on this Pinchas. The end of last week's sedra. If you remember, 95 psukim. And by the way, we're still a week ahead of the States, so the States are still a week behind us. So for those who are listening abroad, save this show if you want for next week. Don't be confused. But I make reference to Bullock also. 95 psukim. 95 psukim out of 104 dealt with the potential threat and devastating results from the plot of Balak and Bilam. And God said, in essence, that we don't have anything to worry about. He will take care of the situation, which he did. Bilam and Balak cooked a plan after the fiasco of their attempt to damage and destroy the people of Israel. Their plan was to get God angry at the people of Israel. In other words, you can't fight them from the outside, neither by sword nor by words. So instead, let's do something to make God angry at the people of Israel. And in the final 9 psukim of last week's Sedra, that's exactly what happened. The women of Moab and Midian seduced men of Israel, mostly from the Shevet of Shimon, it seems, to the orgiastic worship of Baal Peor. Different Mefarshim have different reads on this, whether it was just promiscuity or also idolatry, but there are significant opinions that it was both. And specifically, one of the leaders of Shevet Shimon, his name is not mentioned until this week's Sedra of Pinchas. There he's spoken of as an Ish, a person who publicly had relations with a Midianite princess. Her name too is mentioned this week, but not last week. And upon seeing this, Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the grandson of Aaron HaKohen, that bastion of peace, shalom, grabbed a romach, a spear, and killed the Israelite man and the Midianite princess who were cavorting in public and flaunting the whole situation. God's anger before Pinchas' act was to bring a plague upon the people, which killed 24,000 people, and Pinchas' act of zealotry stopped the magefa. Again, the commentaries weigh in differently on this. Some say that it stopped the plague from taking more victims, and some say that the plague took exactly the 24,000 who were guilty of the revelry with Baal Peor, and that's why it stopped. One or the other, the beginning of this week's Sedra, and last week, when you finished the Sedra, it was, like the old narrators used to say, will Pinchas be lynched by a mob of Shimonites in anger for his killing of their leader? Will Pinchas's act be justified and explained? Stay tuned next week, same time, same station. In other words, the shul, where we read Parsha Pinchas this week, and what we have. And by the way, in Chutz La'aretz, they will also read the beginning of Parsha Pinchas this Shabbat, but at Mincha. And that's beside the point. And the answer comes at the beginning of the Sedra, where God says to Moshe, speak to the people, spread the word that Pinchas justly stood up for my honor, and in his merit I stopped the plague and reversed my plan to destroy all of the house of Israel. technical point. Not only am I recording this earlier than usual, I'm also recording it from home on my laptop with a different headphones, and I notice on the screen that there seems to be a background noise, which I can't get rid of, so I hope that my voice is coming out strongly enough to overwhelm the background noise. Now back on track. Pinchas was awarded by God one or two things. The reading in the pasuk itself is a little unclear, but again, the commentaries weigh in on the nature of the two gifts to Pinchas. One is called Biriti Shalom, my covenant of peace, and it is variously explained as having a peaceful personal life, whereas a person having killed someone, even a justified killing, would have an uncomfortable disquiet from his soul because he took a life. And the blessing was, you did a good job, Pinchas, and I will see to it that you will not be adversely affected by the experience of having taken a life. Furthermore, the Brit Kohunat Olam, the covenant of the Kohuna, is explained in different ways. One way is that when the Kohuna was first established, Aharon was anointed, so were his four sons, Nadav and Avihu, who died earlier, and Elazar and Itamar, who continued in Aharon's footpath. And those five people were anointed as Kohanim and had the status of Kohen Gadol, even when they were not active in that role, because of the anointment, and all their children to be born in perpetuity will be Kohanim, which means any Kohen today is, if he is a bona fide Kohen, is a direct descendant from Aaron through one of his sons, which would mean Elazar or Itamar, because Nadav and Avihu died without children. The one person that was alive at the time that this was established was Pinchas, the son of Elazar, which means he was not born to a Kohen. His father Elazar was not a Kohen when Pinchas was born. Nor was he in the future born to a Kohen because he was already born, which means he was fated or destined not to be a Kohen until this episode where he was granted Berit Kohunat Olam by God. And that made the lineage of Aaron complete. Otherwise, it would have been, I'm a descendant of Aaron, but I come from Pinchas and I'm not a Kohen. Not so. So there were six people who were given the Kohuna, not born to the Kohuna: Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Itamar, and Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. So that's one way of explaining the Brit Kohunat Olam. Another way is that when a Kohen takes a life, even justifiably, he is no longer allowed to function with Birkat Kohanim, and I'm not sure how that impacts on other functions. And Pinchas was, again, given by God the Brit Kohunat Olam, notwithstanding the fact that he took lives, because this was an unusual, a unique situation, and this is the way God decreed it. Another explanation is that not only will he have the Kohuna, but from him will come Kohanim Gedolim through the generations. And so it was. Now, if Pinchas did not begin Parsha Pinchas, I mean, by the way, you will hear me say Pinchas when I pronounce it correctly in Hebrew, Pinchas, Pinchas, or Pinchas, which is not the correct pronunciation, but it's the common usage of the name among Ashkenazis, especially with the Anglos, where all names became slightly mispronounced, and the mispronunciation stuck. How many Moshes do you know compared to Moshe? And it goes on and on like that. Avraham, Avraham. Yitzchak, Yitzchak. Yaakov, Yaakov. And so it is in many, many names that they are misaccented. And in the case of Pinchas, the shva under the nun is a shva na, but many people who know a Pinchas and call him by name will pronounce it as a shva nach. Personally, my name is Pinchas, and it does not have a yud in it, which is a little unusual because out of the 25 times in Tanakh that the name appears, 24 of them have a yud. And all references to this Pinchas, Ben Elazar, Ben Aaron, HaKohen, have a yud. And the only way I could explain why my name does not is that I am named after my father's father's father, my great-grandfather, whose name was Pinchas without a yud. How he got that name without a yud, I don't know. On the other hand, at the very beginning of the Sedra, there is a small yud, rather than a regular size yud, and a yud is small enough already, and this is extra small in the name Pinchas, and whatever that means, maybe that's why people dropped the yud. Okay, now, again, I started to say, if God himself had not said, whoa, hold on, civil war potential here, I am telling you that Pinchas averted further disaster, and he atoned for the people of Israel. That's how I view it, and that's the way it is, and he has been rewarded for it, and there are no further recriminations towards him. On the other hand, what he did needs to be prefaced by, don't try this on your own. Now, most of the good deeds of our ancestors are to be emulated and serve as guides for us, their descendants. If Avram Avinu was hospitable and welcomed guests into his home, then we should do the same. On the other hand, when there is a negative behavior, like the brothers selling Yosef into slavery, that does not mean that we, their descendants, should do that. We should learn from positive and negative experiences. But if Pinchas's act of zealotry is considered positive because God said so, nonetheless, you can't do it on your own. You can't learn from that. Sadly, there are Jews who use as a blank check for violence, kanoim poginbo, the zealous people will take the law into their own hands and attack. What Pinchas did was wrong, except that it was right. And that is not to be emulated because we do not have the ability to judge a situation without due process. Did Pinchas have that ability? Obviously, yes, because God established it as so, but not to be copied. Enough on that. Right after the conclusion of the Pinchas, Zimri, and Cosby episode, those were the names given to the Shimonite leader and to the Midianite princess. And that's why I used to have a picture of Bill Cosby and Dora Tidbits because of Cosby Batsur, but because of the unfortunate situation that has come to light about Bill Cosby, I was given instructions not to use his picture anymore, and therefore I put in one of the Crosby brothers with a minus R, because if you take Crosby and take out the R, you're left with Cosby also. Okay. Following that, Moshe is commanded to gather an army of 1,000 soldiers from each of the tribes and to avenge against Midian for what they did. Following the command to form an army, another census was taken. Commentaries point out that the census was after the plague that killed 24,000, and that that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, to count his remaining flock, so to speak. In addition, it was a military census from which the armies were selected, and it was a census of those who would be entering Eretz Yisrael. Torah makes a point of saying no one was included in that census who was in the first census when they came out of Egypt, except for Kalev and Yehoshua. And not going into it now, but there's a complex system by which the land was apportioned in Eretz Yisrael, but it was based on who came out of Mitzrayim and their heirs who were alive at the time going into Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, as part of the portion of the census, or following it right away, is the famous situation of the daughters of Tzelophchad. Torah has told us that that Tzelophchad did not have any sons, he only had daughters. Therefore, none of them were part of this military census, which counts males from 20 years and up only. So they came thinking that they would be losing out on their father's portions in Eretz Yisrael because no heirs were recorded in the census. Moshe, at God's, Moshe brings the issue to God, so to speak, and God clarifies the issue. I have to be very careful here. I am a very strong believer in the fact that this was not an afterthought. This was part of the Dinim of Yerusha, the laws of inheritance from Sinai. And it either escaped Moshe's memory or, which maybe is more likely, it was purposely done by asking God to give honor to these girls, women, who came forward with this request. And they become a symbol of the love of Eretz Yisrael. So the laws of inheritance were set down. And that basically is a man's sons inherit from him. If there are no sons, then his daughters inherit. If there are no sons or daughters, then it goes up the family tree to the father. If he's not alive, then his other sons, which would be the deceased brother, etc., etc. One issue that we're not going to get into now because of time constraints is the details of how to circumvent, I don't know if that's the best word, in an acceptable, kosher way, the situation which in today's society does not go over well, to put it that bluntly, where only if there are no sons and daughters inherit. Let's take a simple situation. I said I wasn't going to get into it. Of a man who dies, survived by a son and a daughter. And the man has expressed a desire that the son and the daughter should equally share in his estate. Now, I'm giving it to you very simply and therefore undetailed, but the idea, bigadol, the general idea. If a man writes a will and says, I hereby bequeath, being of sound mind and body, blah, 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 I hereby bequeath my estate to be equally divided between my son and my daughter, then in Jewish law, this will is invalid, has no standing, because a man cannot bequeath to other than the heirs that the Torah requires. And the son, according to Torah law, inherits and takes care of his sister. And that sometimes works against the son, depending on how much there is in the estate. So how can a man get around that? Now, there are many Mishnayot and Gemara which describe ways that he cannot get around it. And then the Mishnah speaks of technical way around it, but that the sages do not smile upon such a person for what he did. I won't go into those details. My question was, how do you do it in an acceptable, kosher, halachic way? And the answer, and I think the only answer, is a kosher will. Now, kosher will, in essence, has to cope with the situation that after you go, you can't take it with you, and you have no control over it. You are the guardian of the money in your estate, the possessions of your estate, until death. So technically, again, only simplified, if one words the document called the kosher will or called halachic estate planning to give as a gift during lifetime to take effect right before death of half of the estate to your daughter, then you succeed not in taking away from the son, because ostensibly he'll get a decent amount, but to also be able to provide what we would call inheritance, which you can't call it that now, to the daughter as well. That's the simplified version. Don't want to go into more, especially since I have to get ready to leave for the Levaya. So that's one of the issues in Parshat Pinchas. I want to emphasize again that it wasn't Moshe coming to God and saying, hey, these girls, these women are really feminists and they're pushing for something, and I need something to assuage their whatever. And God said, okay, let me think. Oh, I know, I have an idea. And he made up the laws of inheritance on the spot. Ain't so. Can't be so. Sof ma'aseh b'machshava t'chila. This was already built in, not as a concession for the daughters who had no brothers, but as the halacha, the laws of inheritance. But it was presented as an answer to the claim of the girls, I say girls, I have no idea how old they were at the time, of the women, to honor them for their care and concern about settling in Eretz Yisrael in a proper way. The portion of Pinchas, which is a large sedra, finishes with the daily Tamidim sacrifices, as well as the Musafim of Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, and holidays. And I'll just say something very quick, although I really wanted to spend more time on it. There is an irony, a very sad, powerful irony. This Shabbat is the 17th of Tammuz, this Shabbat we read in Israel, Parshat Pinchas. And in Parshat Pinchas, we read about the commitment of the people to a daily routine of a lamb brought as an offering to God in the morning and another one in the afternoon, every single day. This element of constant every day is part and carries a message of our commitment to God. Our commitment is not Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Our commitment is not only the Seder on Pesach night or the Megillah on Purim. The commitment in total is every single day. Every single day. So we now move to the Mishnah in Ta'anit towards the end, which tells us of five calamities that befell the Jewish people that are associated with Shivas or Batamuz. One of them is Batel HaTamid, the constant commitment symbol of the daily sacrifice, ceased before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash on Shivas or Batamuz. That was a devastating blow in itself, because it broke something that was continuous from Mount Sinai. Olat Tamid Ha'asuya Bahar Sinai. This Olah, the daily offering, started at Sinai and went through unbroken all the way till Shivas or Batamuz, where when it stopped. That's the contrast and that's the irony of Parshat Pinchas with the Tamid being read on Shabbat, the 17th of Tammuz. On the positive side, we have the fact that the 17th of Tammuz this year, we're not fasting. We're eating Shabbat meals and singing Shabbat smirot. So it gives us a little projection to the future fulfillment of the prophecy of Zechariah, which was that there will come a time when the fast days of Tisha B'Av and the other three that go with it, including Shivas or Batamuz, will become Yamim Tovim, festive days. May we soon see that in fruition. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Yish Tameach. Oh yeah.
צריך להגיד המילים האלו, שיהיה בית המקדש השלישי, קרוב לימינו אמן. Gave me this close to write, what a special song. Lord.